Now on News Talk, as part of our autumn season of documentary on News Talk, producer Simon Tierney looks at the world of exotic pets in Ireland in Man's New Best Friend.
Well, you can't hold me, I'm too slippery, I do no sleeping, I get lonely. Well, you can touch me if you want to, but I got poison, I just might bite you.
In the boom time, there was one particular specialist reptile shop that sold 100,000 reptiles in 1 year. Now, that's an awful lot of reptiles.
The people who keep them range from all walks of life. I know people from barristers to barmen. You know, it's the full walk of life to keep them.
Yeah, they're just, I really like them now. They're just a thing that I don't think I could go without or ever imagine myself not having. Really shaped me a little bit. I see them as cuddly, adorable, and very loving.
Ireland is awash with exotic animals, even though none of them are native to this country. Each year, thousands arrive here, yet it is impossible to know exactly how many, or indeed the variety of species that now live here, as there's no licensing system in place, unlike the situation with pet dogs. Most of these animals are kept as pets in a thriving subculture that is often misunderstood.
My name is James Hennessy, and I'm the zoo director of the National Reptile Zoo in Gorin, Kilkenny.
Do we know how many reptiles are kept as pets in Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I know personally that there's things like with pythons. You're looking with things like royal pythons. You're talking to over 1,000 coming in each year. You know, alone, that's just one species. You know.
Well, my name is Kevin Cunningham. I'm the manager of the National Exotic Animal Sanctuary in Bolivar in County Meath. Well, we bought the land about 6 years ago. Prior to that, all of the people involved in the organisation had all worked together in different places with animal welfare. But we found that with the boom times, there were so many animals coming in that really we sort of felt there needed to be something dedicated to the specific side of it, which is exotics. There's lots of people doing dogs and cats and horses very well, but there was nothing really out there for the weird and the wonderful creatures.
Well, exotic would be anything that would be an unusual pet. So exotics can be anything from a parrot, a budgie, a canary, a snake, a reptile, giant land snails. They can be tortoises, terrapins, raccoons. Anything that would be unusual would be considered to be an exotic. And we do get them all in from time to time. My name is Gillian Bird. I am Head of Education and Media in the DSPCA.
How popular do you think exotic pets are in Ireland at the moment?
I think they are less popular than they were a few years ago. I think people are sort of looking and seeing the cost of owning these animals. Before the recession hit us, they were very popular. And when the recession hit, we saw a lot of people actually surrendering their animals to us because they couldn't afford to upgrade the animals' habitats. So the likes of snakes would grow constantly throughout their lives. They require larger tanks.
You know, the advent of the internet, everything is available. At the same time, the Celtic tiger kind of came into its own then not long after that. You know, so before you knew it, everyone had loads of money, had access to loads of information and access to any animal they wanted. And I saw this huge flood and suddenly come in. And there was quite a big jump.
You wouldn't really know what your neighbour is keeping as pets. And they're one of these animals that once you start with one, it's a bit of a collector situation. So somebody who has one snake may well have a tarantula, may well have a lizard.
Ben Lyons, the co-owner of Reptile Haven on Fishamble Street in Dublin.
The shop is very much an old school shop. There's sort of a very relaxed vibe to it. I think we tend to know a lot of our customers. Very much a family orientated shop. The overall background, you know, is the shop itself has been reduced in half in size over the last year and a half due to obviously on the backlash of the economy. We've a wide range of animals, Simon. Obviously the onus at the moment is very much a beginner's, you know, introduction species to the hobby. We would have typically, you know, the all-time favourites like bearded dragons, corn snakes, ball pythons, leopard geckos. And then we go up to obviously more the unusual morphs, which would be colour variants of maybe of the sum or more. That's Matilda. She's the resident jungle girl. She tends to let one of her blood-curdling roars out every now and then to remind us if she's there. But no, Matilda's she's just gone too, and she's very much part of furniture. She's
your baby.
Yeah.
And what's your relationship to Ben?
I'm Ben's partner, Melody. And Matilda's our daughter. She comes in to work with us every day, and she's been pretty much, you know, she's been around animals since she has been born, and she's very comfortable with them. She is great with them. Obviously, it's always supervised.
What's going on here, Melody?
What have you got? No, what are you holding?
Corn snake.
Pretty much.
Does he have a name, Melanie?
He doesn't, actually. Do you want to name the corn snake, Matilda? Bo with the corn snake. That's a bit silly. That'll be confusing. Bo with the corn snake.
She's handling the corn snake very comfortably. So she's used to this.
Yeah, no, she definitely is. Hang on, chicken. Come on, two hands then. Two hands if you're holding the corn snake.
I have about 20 reptiles, along with a couple of aquatic species of fish.
And where do you keep most of them?
Most of them are in my room in vivs or tanks. My name is Katie Reed. Well, with snakes, you hear nothing but bad things about them. You never really hear anything good. Like with anacondas eating people, which they wouldn't, which is ridiculous. People having snakes sleep beside them, and the most asked question I get about the animals is, would your snake not eat you? It's ridiculous. I would have got my first exotic pet around 4 years ago, which would have been the corn snake Bro.
And how did you feel about taking a corn snake as a pet at that stage when you were 15?
I didn't really mind because he was kind of a worm anyway. He was only a year and a half, so he was like really small anyway. He was kind of aggressive though, from like not being handled much, but he was alright. I have got an amazing interest in reptiles now. I want to actually be a herpetologist when I get older. I just think they're fascinating, and just everything about them is great, really. I'd rather them to like a basic cat or dog or whatever, because they're unique and they all have their own little personalities, and they're just great.
Well, I got my first lizard when I was probably about 14. I've seen it in a garden centre. I was really, really interested in it. Just like the idea of it, and I begged my mother to buy it for me, and it took a long time to get her to cave in. There was a lot of jobs done in exchange, you know. My name is Ronan Colfer. I'm 24 and I live in Maynooth. Currently I have two Burmese pythons, two boa constrictors, two false water cobras, and a couple of tarantulas as well, some scorpions. I have a Madagascan tree-eyed lizard, a African grey parrot, and some fish.
Yeah, I mean, it's the stereotype would be the, I suppose, tattooed, pierced, goth type person who keeping reptiles. It's not quite the reality. The average keeper, from what I see, would tend to be male. Now, you do get a lot of girls keep stuff, but it would tend to be male. It would tend to be somebody between the age of about 15, 16, up to about 24. And I think it's probably one of those life kind of things that, you know, after you get to that age, people have to end up leaving college, their lifestyle changes, and they end up getting out of the reptile hobby and doing something else. You tend to get people who are more interested in the science side of it.
I'm more a python girl than a boa girl, even though I have some boas, but I just prefer pythons personally. So my name is Emma Quinlan. I'm probably best known to most as a model who had some pet snakes and interesting other exotic creatures, from crocodiles and lizards and things like that. The time when there was probably maybe 100 at some stage, I don't even know how many there was. I would say that would have been from about 2006, 2012. I don't remember not ever being interested in them, if that makes any sense. So,
did your parents have exotics, or when did you first come into contact?
No, my dad, I mean, learned to appreciate them. I won't say he ever liked them.
I'm on the road, driving from Dublin to County Kildare. I want to meet Katie in her home, because she is so attached to her 20 exotic pets that she keeps them in her bedroom. As someone who is struggling to even touch a snake, I can't imagine what it must be like to sleep next to them. This is an extraordinary bedroom. It's the most extraordinary bedroom I've ever been in, Katie.
Thanks.
It's the normal bedroom of a young woman. There's a lot of teddy bears up in one corner. There's a poster of...
All Time Low.
And there's a lot of graffiti on the walls.
Yeah, I like to get my friends to sign the walls. It makes it more personal and stands out a bit.
And then there are over 20 exotic animals in this bedroom in various enclosures. And Buster, the Jack Russell mongrel. Now, tell me this, Katie, right? Some people might think that it's unusual to have reptiles in your bedroom.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Why do you keep them in here?
Well, it was actually the only free space we had for them. And I just like having them here because I can monitor them more carefully and they're with me.
Would you be scared that one of them might get out while you're asleep?
No, not a chance.
Levi is a...
Rankin's bearded dragon.
Okay. What is it about Levi that you really like compared to, say, a dog?
Well, funnily enough, Levi actually responds to the sound of my voice, which you wouldn't really expect. And I don't know what it is, but I just really like her and she's just really friendly and everything.
Describe her for the listeners.
She's a bearded dragon, but she's very, very small. She's about a foot. She has a very, very quirky personality. She likes to climb her log a lot and then jump off it from the top. Which makes no sense. It's quite a drop.
Do you ever take Levi out?
Yeah.
Can we do that now?
Yeah, keep him.
You're kind of petting the top of Levi's head now.
Yeah, that's right.
Why are you doing that?
Just to comfort her and make sure she's okay.
Do you think she likes that?
Yeah, she likes it when you do that. Sometimes she'll close her eyes. Oh, there's a dog down here called Buster.
He got a bit excited there when you took out.
Oh, he's very intrigued with everything. He just wants to eat every single one of them and... Unfortunately.
A lot of people, when you say to them you've got snakes in your house, people have this vision of snakes swinging out of, you know, lampshades and that kind of thing as soon as they're going to walk in. But if you walked into my house, came in for a cup of tea, and if I didn't tell you that I had snakes, you wouldn't know I had them.
And do any of your neighbours know that you keep exotic pets in the house? Because obviously there's a lot of other houses on this road here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most of them do know because, often they've invited a lot of the local children will come in to have a look at them and that. Or at Halloween, we tend to go a bit overboard decorating the house and that kind of thing. But we would always have, like, in the window downstairs, we would have some of the spider tanks or something, and or might answer the door with the snake sometimes. And
would you describe yourself as an exotic person, Ronan?
I don't think I'd describe myself as exotic. I do like kind of slightly different things.
Such as?
I don't know if I'd class myself as exotic. I mean, I've got different interests. I'm interested primarily in animals, different types of predatory animals mainly. I'm into music as well. I played music for a long time as well.
What sort of music are you into?
It very, very different musics. I don't have a particular genre. I mean, I'm a rocker at heart, but. Welcome to the jungle.
You know, when it comes to cats and dogs, it's seen as a big commitment, and yet reptiles are more seen as a kind of an impulse buy, and when in fact they're going to live much longer than any cat or dog.
As a dog owner all my life, I'm interested in the reasons that people choose an exotic pet over, say, a Jack Russell or a Labrador. I'm also keen to understand to what extent an exotic animal can be domesticated.
First and foremost, I'm a scientist. You won't get a reptile. It's not going to look at you the same way a dog does. They're a non-social animal in general. They're going to see you as just something that's bringing them food, and that's it. And they will show attention towards you, but literally for the food reward. And after that, then they've lost interest. I think people can, we can anthropomorphize stuff, so people can see an animal, they can see it running towards the glass looking for its food, and they will see they can kind of interpret that. But they, you know, it's generally not what's actually happening. But, you know, people kind of get what they want out of stuff. As I say, then for other people, it's that thing where they're more interested in the science and the way the animal acts and behaves, and its feeding habits and things like that. And I think that they get something from that.
If I was in Indiana Jones, where he's in the pit with all the snakes and they're all the same, I'd have been able to pick two of them out, because they definitely have definitive characters or personalities. So Squirt is a Burmese python. I suppose when I got her initially, she was maybe 2 days old, and the whole clutch of eggs was in one tank, and she was separate. And I remember asking why she was separate, and it was because she was stealing all the food off the others, and she was just really grouchy, and I was like, well, I need to have that one. And I just had her. I don't know, she was just really, really always quite quirky.
Did exotic animals bring you together?
It actually, yes, somewhat. I was studying animal care in college, and I was a customer in the shop. And for my work placement, I came in and I was doing it in the shop. So I was volunteering for a few years in here. So it was pretty much from that, and we just became very, very good friends. And so over a few years, then, yeah, kind of blossomed into a relationship.
Fantastic, yeah.
I started getting more interested in different species and keeping different species and that. They recommended to go to a little shop in Fashamba Street called Reptile Haven, and I went in one Saturday with my dad, and essentially never left, really.
We'd know most of our customers and we'd know them quite well. It would be unusual. We find it strange if somebody comes in, buys a box of crickets and leaves. We always think, what? What do you mean? No conversation, no hello.
Well, there's a serious sense of community in there amongst exotic animal keepers. I mean, it's a very big hobby, but, you know, it can be very hard sometimes to find people to talk to about it who, you know, are similar interests in that.
Okay, and, so talk us through, this is Bro the
corn snake. He is an honorary corn snake. He's really, really big. He's like 6 foot at this stage. He's nice when you take him out. He's my first pet, so my first reptile, so yet again, the bones there from that, and I had him since he was a year and a half. I'm holding him in my hand now. Yeah, he's probably, if I let him, he will go around my entire neck and chill underneath my hood.
You really love these animals.
Yeah, they're just, I really like them now. They're just a thing that I don't think I could go without or ever imagine myself not having. They've like really shaped me a little bit.
I'm back in Beliver in County Meath at the National Exotic Animal Sanctuary. It's a little rainy, but this site is quite extraordinary. Abandoned donkeys next to abandoned ostriches and raccoons, and down at the back are some reptile houses where the many snakes, spiders and bearded dragons that people have disregarded are homed and cared for by Kevin Cunningham and his team. But I've travelled down here for a specific reason. I want to get some clarity on the legalities surrounding the keeping of snakes, spiders and lizards. There are thousands of exotics all over the country in people's homes, but how much do we really know about them? And to what extent are their populations monitored?
As you say, you need a license for a dog. You now currently need a passport and a microchip for a horse or a donkey to have it. In terms of keeping a tiger, you don't need anything. If you can get your hands on one, you can effectively keep anything that you want in this country. There are restrictions on primates, being monkeys and things, coming into the country under a worldwide directive. And then with endangered species coming from outside the European Union, you would require paperwork from the National Parks and Wildlife Service to bring them in. But in terms of anything within the European Union with European free trade, unfortunately, you can keep anything you want. If you can buy it in France or Germany or Switzerland and bring it into the country, you can keep it. In Britain, which is obviously our nearest neighbour, Britain and Northern Ireland, they have a thing called the DWA, which is the Dangerous Wild Animals Act. And the idea behind that is if you're going to keep something that's capable of inflicting harm upon a human being or other animals, that you're required to have a licence, to have basic knowledge and procedures in place, and be inspected by your local council before you can get the animal. We don't have, unfortunately, a DWA act here in this country. And given the types of animals that we're seeing over the last few years, and the fact that people are keeping more and more unusual and dangerous animals, we really feel it's time for something to be brought into the country before it becomes an unmanageable problem.
So with exotic pets, it's a disaster. There is absolutely no legislation regarding the keeping of exotics by private individuals in Ireland. You can literally own anything from the smallest little tiny harmless corn snake all the way up to a tiger without breaking any laws, which is absolutely ludicrous. Once the animal's welfare needs are kept and they're not being, you know, there's no animal cruelty issues, there's no law broken.
I don't think it'll ever happen where you'll have to have a license for keeping a snake, because how do you check on that? Do you go into everybody's house, into every room of every house and see how many reptiles they have in tanks?
What about CITES? I thought that if you were bringing a dangerous animal into Ireland, it needed to have a CITES certificate.
Okay, yeah, so with CITES, animals that are covered under CITES, you'll get something called an Article 10 certificate. Now, the animals listed for Article 10 certificates are what's called CITES 1 or Annex A animals. Things like spectacled caiman, which are small crocodiles, which can be bought as pets, those are CITES 2, so they don't come under CITES. Also, things like venomous snakes, like cobras, a lot of the cobra species won't be CITES listed. Most of the rattlesnakes aren't CITES. CITES 1 listed species, so they don't require paperwork.
But why is it a problem if exotic pets don't have a license?
Just to know the numbers. I mean, I suppose it's like a census. You'd want to know what's in your country and how it's affecting your people. We also carry no antivenom over here. None of the emergency services have training in how to handle an animal like this. If, you know, if the guards go out to a house in wherever and there's a snake there, they don't know if it's venomous, they don't know if it's not. What if they get bitten?
Anybody can get one now, and like there's so many of them on Dundeal and like adverts and everything, people just throwing them away, and there's so many rescues filled up with them. It's like actually ridiculous at this stage.
Yeah, there's always a story to every animal. I mean, some of the animals we breed here ourselves, I might add that nearly 99% of the animals are captive bred. So,
what does captive bred mean?
Well, captive bred would mean that they're bred in captivity as opposed to taken from the wild.
In the boom time, there was one particular specialist reptile shop that sold 100,000 reptiles in 1 year. Now, that's an awful lot of reptiles. But we have also seen in the last 20 years in this country people keeping tigers. There have been well-documented cases, people keeping lions, people keeping bears, baboons. We currently have two or three people in this country engaged in the sale of various types of venomous snakes that they're breeding in Ireland, in their homes, with no regulation.
I think really the best thing that can be done is about the selling of these animals. The DSPCA feel very strongly about animals being sold online. So what we would really ask, would there be control over the animals that are sold online? Because obviously you can go into a pet shop and you can buy an animal, and the pet shops are supposed to live by the regulations that they don't sell to somebody under the age of 16. And the majority of the pet shops are actually very good with that, because you're talking about a fair bit of money as well. But I think it's the online selling of animals that is an issue and does need to be regulated properly so that there can be some comeback. So if somebody buys an animal and there's a welfare issue, it can be investigated rather than the person just vanishing off the face of the earth because they've used a disposable mobile phone.
So are you saying that some snakes are arriving in this country through the post?
I think as far as I know, I got mine, one of my snakes years ago was delivered by a courier.
10 years ago, if we got a call, or even 5 years ago in the summer, you'd get a lot of snakes would appear in people's gardens and stuff, and they'd be escape pets. And you'd go out and you'd know it's going to be a corn snake, or you get a call about a tarantula, it's going to be a Chilean rose tarantula, or one of the commonly kept creatures. But that's changed now. You have people breeding pit vipers and people keeping funnel web spiders, and, you know,
In Ireland.
There's people in our own county here selling venomous snakes on secondhand deal websites and through their Facebook pages to anybody that wants to give them the money for them.
You're listening to Man's New Best Friend on News Talk 106 to 108.
The official policy position of the ASPCA, the American Association for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, is that no exotic animal taken from the wild or wild by nature should be kept as a pet. But what does the DSPCA in Dublin think?
We don't like seeing animals being kept in captivity. We like to see animals living out their lives as naturally as they can. So if you have a snake and it's being kept in a small enclosure, it's really not an ideal environment for the animal. Obviously, snakes, if they're living in the wild, have larger territories that they go into. They don't have a small tank, and they don't just get fed animals that are dead and be defrosted. So we obviously would be against people keeping many of the exotic animals, but we understand people do, and our belief would be with any animal, as long as you are doing the best you can for the animal and providing it with the best environment, both from an enrichment point of view and from a welfare point of view, that is what has to happen.
Oh well, Sergio, my darling baby, who unfortunately passed away, was about 8 foot, so his paws or his claws were bigger than my hands.
Is that not a crocodile?
No, it's a monitor lizard. So it's similar to Komodo dragon, their monitor as well. Look very similar to them. He was pretty cool. He was potty trained. He used to chill out with my dogs. And he had a litter tray. He was never locked up. He had a heat lamp in the room that he used to walk over to. In the winter, he was put in a big enclosure. But
so you kept him, like he'd come around the garden or into the house?
Oh, yeah. He was free roaming in the house, yeah.
So, like, would Sergio come into the kitchen?
Oh yeah, Sergio, chill in the kitchen. Yeah, with the dogs. Chilling out. Oh yeah, I'd pet him, give him a cuddle. He'd fall asleep on me. I'd pick him up and his tail would be on the ground and I'd be walking around with him.
You know the way some people keep their dogs on their beds when they go to sleep at night time? Did you ever have that with any exotics?
Yes. There was once or twice when I'd come in from Coppers late at night and Sergio used to follow me up the stairs. And my ex-boyfriend was the guard and he used to come in from work once or twice. He'd kill me for saying this. And get into the bed and there'd be like a big lizard lying and then he'd kill me. He'd be like, "Ever get that thing off the bed?" I was like, "Oh, whatever."
What do you feed, bro?
Large adult mice from the pet shop.
And what do bearded dragons eat?
They eat vegetables and bugs.
What bugs?
Marios, crickets, locusts.
So you've got about 15 exotic pets, Katie.
Yeah.
And they all have to be fed and looked after. Is it an expensive hobby for you?
Yes, because the bulbs need to be changed a lot and you need to get new heat mats and one of them breaks, and upgrading enclosures as well can cost a fair amount of money. But no, at the same time, because if you just get it in bulk, it's cheaper. So
I have my own pets here, one of my own pets. We, as part of our education program in the DSPCA, we introduced last year giant African land snails to our program. We find that snails work very, very well with the teaching of our empathy. This one has been nicknamed Grassy. The shell is a good, what are we talking about, 12 centimetres in size. The body is beautifully pale. I absolutely adore these ones. This is an albino, so it's a white-skinned. How would you describe it? Well, I suppose if you compare it, that if you were to half the length of a cucumber.
Where do you keep them?
I have a tank here. You can see I actually have a tank there in my office, which keeps them, and they have to be heated. So they're like a reptile. They have to be kept under a heat mat.
What does Daniel the lurcher think about Grassy?
Daniel likes them. Daniel comes up and sniffs them. He knows them well. He knows he's not allowed to touch them, so he actually doesn't. But there has been some very cute photographs taken of Daniel and Snail touching noses together.
Now, some people, to play devil's advocate, Gillian, some people would think you might be a bit mad keeping a giant African land snail as a pet, because they might think, well, what can you get out of that relationship, or how can you have a relationship with an animal like that?
Well, most of those people would be like my husband, who thinks I'm going through a bit of a midlife crisis with my snail collecting. Well, apart from anything else, they feel lovely to hold. They're cold. They give you a lovely massage on your hand because they're constantly moving and you can feel the muscles moving. I'll let you hold one in a minute. And
oh God.
And no, but they're actually fantastic.
I see Grassy has almost entirely come out of his shell now. Bigger now.
Oh yeah, no, they are. They are big and they're very strong and muscular. And they are and quite heavy as well.
Grassy.
Trust in me, just in me. Shut your eyes and trust in me. Hold still, please.
There is a dark side to the exotic pet industry in Ireland. Unbeknownst to most, there are completely legal, dangerous or venomous exotic animals being kept in people's homes as pets. Poisonous snakes, venomous spiders and even big cats. Kevin Cunningham of the National Exotic Animal Sanctuary.
That's a peacock tarantula, also known as a gooty jumping spider. She came to us from a situation we went to. We got a call from somebody in their family home. One of their members of the family had moved out. And they knew that they kept some degree of reptiles, some lizards and the odd tarantula. They didn't realise until, actually, I think it was their 6 or 7 year old niece had made a comment that about the type of spiders that they had in the house, that they looked at some pictures and sent them up to me. One of them was a black widow. So I went down and there was basically this box bedroom of abandoned spiders and scorpions of about 120. The itsy bitsy spider. Some turned out to be things like funnel web spiders. We never actually found the black widow they had the photograph of, which is slightly worrying. African brown widow spiders, various other spiders that were being bred there. He was breeding tarantulas. We kept the gooty jumping spider because they're an endangered species. She would have been either posted or couriered into the country, bought online. They come from a very small area in India. And there's probably 1,000 square kilometres of forest left where they actually live. If she were to bite you, she would put you in hospital for a week to 2 weeks with severe cramps and vomiting and diarrhoea. So not a nice experience.
So how you went to this house, was the house abandoned or was there someone living there?
No, it was very much the opposite. It was a family home where one member of the family had moved out and his bedroom door was sealed with tape and they wouldn't go in. And so I went into a room where basically, as I say, about 120 spiders and scorpions in small tubs and lizards that he had in polythene boxes that were starving. And it was a very difficult situation because obviously, for whatever reason, this person had moved on and the family were looking at the animals and just really didn't know what to do with them.
Was it a dangerous situation for you?
It was one we took a lot of care with.
Do you think there are any people in Ireland keeping big cats as pets?
Yeah, there are a few. It's not a huge kind of area in Ireland. There's, I would say, probably a handful, maybe up to about 15 keepers of big cats here.
What sort of animals are we talking about?
You've got mostly, there's a few cougars, there's some lions, African lions. I don't think there's a couple of tigers and some panthers.
Can you explain to me how people can say keep a lion? Do they keep it in their back garden or how does that work?
Yeah, so the ones I know, I'd only know a couple of them. The ones that I do know of, they actually have zoo type setups in where they've got like farms. So they have actually done it right, unfortunately. Potentially there are others who haven't, but things like snakes they're escape artists. If you get a venomous snake, if you're living in a housing estate where all the houses are joined together with adjoining attics, and I've been in these situations, I've seen venomous snakes like this. If a snake escapes, it's then gone into the neighbour's house and there's a next-door neighbour's 10-year-old child's bedroom. You've got a potential snake in there, you know. Situations like that should never happen.
Well, you can't hold me, I'm too slippery. Well, I got poison, I just might bite you.
Okay, James, so where are we now?
Okay, so we're in the venomous unit. So this is the section, this is the off-show area where we keep our venomous, or access to our onshore venomous snakes. So it's quite secure, as you can see.
Yeah, so we've got a door here. Make sure this door remains locked with a key up high and a sign saying caution, venomous animals. And then you've got some information highlighted in yellow. What's that about?
If you're bitten here, you can die. It's as simple as that. So we've got instructions. So if someone's bitten here, they literally will follow through the instructions. On this wall over here, we keep our anti-venom in a cabinet.
I was under the impression, but maybe things have changed, that there wasn't anti-venom in Ireland.
We're the only stockist of anti-venom, and we keep it in specifically relative to the species we have. You could pay $5,000 US dollars for one vial of anti-venom. If you're bitten, it could take up to $25 or 25 vials for a bite, and the anti-venom has a shelf life, so anything from 1 year to 5 years. So the costs are prohibitive to keep antivenom for every species.
So what happens if private keeper of a venomous snake gets bitten then?
And honestly, they're probably going to die. The fact is they will call poison control and they'll call the hospitals. The hospitals will try and source antivenom. They'll either ring us, and if we don't have the antivenom, depending on the species they've been bitten by, they'll then ring poison control in the UK. They then have to source the antivenom for Ireland. It's now privatised over there, so it has to be bought. It'll then have to be helicopter lifted back to Ireland or the victim choppered across to the UK. All that takes hours and hours and hours. If it's a neurotoxic species, something like a cobra, there's a chance the person could be dead in about 2 hours. So they might not make that chopper flight.
In your opinion, I mean, how many venomous snakes are there in Ireland being kept as pets? Is this a very, very small group of people or...?
It kind of comes in waves and troughs. I've seen it kind of, you know, one person might get something that's deemed kind of cool and then suddenly four or five other guys have it and then before you know it, 20 guys have them. So as an example, over one six-month period, we were handed in 16 different venomous snakes.
Some of those snakes, I believe, are in here.
Yeah.
Let's go and have a look. So you've just picked up a...
So this is a plexiglass shield, just in case something is to strike. And I'm going to open up the rattlesnakes. I'll show you a quick look.
I feel like I'm on death row or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. We can all have hours of fun outside. When staff come in here, there's a seriousness that comes over you. I don't know what it is about it, but it's a frame of mind you have to have.
Is there a chance that he could strike out at us here?
Yep, there is. And that's why, if you notice, I'm actually not going to open the door with my hand. So we use snake hooks for everything. So I get you to step back one step. So we've got two Western Diamondback rattlesnakes in here. There's going to be one just down here. So you can just see his head peeping over the door. So he's looking for food. So the one thing about keeping venomous snakes in captivity is they're not as scared as you as a wild snake would be. So normally a rattlesnake in the wild would rattle, make loads of noise, and then warn you that he's there so he doesn't get stood on. In this case, he's been nice and silent. He's coming straight up and he's looking for food. If he was to bite me in the wild, the chances are the amount of venom he would inject wouldn't be that a huge amount, because he'd want to save it because he needs it for his prey. Whereas in captivity, if he's to bite me, he's assuming I'm feeding him, so he's going to inject as much venom as he possibly can. So it's almost a worse bite sometimes.
Got his snake hook and he's pulling the rattlesnake out now, and he seems quite large. Okay, so he's out of his enclosure now. He is being handled by James with a hook and he's not coming towards me, which is really good news.
Having spoken to exotic pet enthusiasts and experts across the length and breadth of the country, I soon realised that it was difficult to figure out exactly which government departments were responsible for the exotic population in Ireland. When I first started my research, I contacted the Department of the Environment, thinking that seems like an obvious place to start. They referred me to the Department of Arts, Heritage and Gaeltacht. This seemed rather strange until I realised that the National Parks and Wildlife Service comes under their remit. They then told me that apart from CITES management, which they do look after, animals in the pet trade come under the remit of the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. However, when I contacted them, they forwarded me a copy of the Animal Health and Welfare Act 2013, which is important, but then referred me back to the National Parks and Wildlife Service, saying that ultimately exotic pets come under the remit of the NPWS, who in turn referred me back once again to the Department of Agriculture. At this point, I was informed that the control of dangerous animals is primarily a public safety issue, and that this might be more appropriately addressed by the Minister for Justice and Equality. There are a number of departments with various roles to play, but it became clear to me that no one particular organisation was really in charge.
Well, in researching this programme, if you had come up with the answer as to who is in charge, I'd be very interested to know. The Department of Agriculture have taken great steps in animal welfare in the last 4 or 5 years. They brought in the Animal Health and Welfare Act 2013, which was basically prior to that we were operating off the 1911 Protection of Animals Act. So 102 years later we got a new animal welfare law, and that has brought in a lot of standards with regards to the keeping of animals and the way that they are kept, and you know, the environments and allowing them to express natural behaviours and stuff. In terms of importing exotic animals and non-native species, as far as I can see, it is the National Parks and Wildlife Service that would be responsible for that under the Wildlife Act, and also on the basis that they run CITES in Ireland, which is the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, which is a worldwide group all countries would subscribe to stop poaching of ivory or taking of animals from the wild and bringing them in and selling them as pets. The National Parks and Wildlife Service is run by the Department of Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht, which is kind of an unusual department to be specialising in the trade in endangered species. I would feel anyway. It prior to that was in the Department of the Environment. But there is not a joined up thinking approach in with regards to who actually is in charge. In one breath, with endangered species, you have customs, then you have agriculture doing animal health and disease and welfare. And they would be responsible for some forms of importation under BALI, like if you're bringing a dog in or out of the country or you're bringing cattle from Northern Ireland into the Republic, they would deal with that side of imports. But then with the National Parks and Wildlife Service, they would be dealing with the other side of imports, which is the non-native and endangered species. So there isn't a joined up approach.
Emma, where do we go from here? I mean, what would you like to see the government do in relation to the keeping of exotic pets in Ireland?
What would I like the government to do? I would like the government to decide what department actually looks after exotic animals and to take their heads out of the sand. I find it really unfortunate that they don't know this, because when someone is bitten, which will happen, there will be a blanket ban, because that's real typical fashion, you know, ban everything. And which is really unfortunate, because there's some really great people out there. I think knowing or having an idea of the numbers of animals that are in the country, they should really know how many animals are in the country. I think they should be put on a list of quarantine or, yeah, database. And I think that, you know, I don't think there should be free movement of these animals in and out of the country, like, because there isn't free movement with horses and dogs. I mean, you know, they need passports to get in and out. So I don't see why that shouldn't exist for snakes either. At least you would know what's coming in. We wouldn't know what's been bred here. But, you know, I don't see why, if you can't pay or register your animal, why you should be allowed to have a snake. If you've nothing to hide, just go and register your animal, pay €50, pay €12, pay something, and do it, because it might, you know, it might incentivize people to double think before they actually buy one of these animals.
Well, we've been promoting sensible legislation for years, since the conception of the shop. We always imposed, in lieu of any proper legislation, we always imposed the British system of the Dangerous Wildlife Animal Act upon ourselves. So if it contained any species contained within, we didn't sell. As regards in the UK, you still don't require a license to keep, say, just looking at the bird eater here or a bearded dragon. They've actually tougher pet shop licensing. You know, it's not as easy to run and obtain and own a pet shop over there as it is here. We would definitely look for sensible legislation. For example, I would say the main difference with maybe a lot of reptile keepers is that a lot of reptile keepers keep a lot of reptiles, as opposed to maybe one or two dogs or a cat. So, you know, individually, I suppose it becomes much harder to regulate if someone's got a collection of 4 lizards, 6 spiders, X amount of snakes, etc., etc. But, I mean, maybe a collective license. We came into the hobby at a time when it was just the growth was quite phenomenal. It was the fastest grown aspect of the pet trade worldwide. And you find that with the death of the Celtic tiger, you find that there's less people keeping snakes, lizards, exotics, if you want to call it that. Of course, there's other factors there into consideration. I mean, the fact that 400,000 people have emigrated since 2008, a lot of that target market would have been sort of maybe typically our target market would have been 18 to 40. 18 to 50 bracket, and of course a lot of our target market just left the country. I mean, we've so many animals that we had to help rehome around that time as well.
Would you like to get a tattoo of some reptiles?
I have some planned, actually. It's going to be a rose with a crested gecko peering out from the side of one of the petals.
Where are you going to get it on your body?
On my thigh. That's a thigh, right?
Yeah. How big?
Around, how big is this? A foot.
Ben and Melanie have tattoos of exotic pets.
Oh, yes, I love Melanie's sleeve. That's really pretty.
Maybe the concept of a reptile shop in the near future in this country might be consigned to maybe more online. I mean, even we had a guy in from Germany there last summer, and he was fairly incredulous there was still a reptile shop in Dublin, because in Cologne, which is a big city in Germany, all the reptile shops have now closed due to private breeders and also the amount of reptile shows that exist.
Do you think you'll need to diversify your business?
Primarily, retail is what we've been doing for years, but we've evolved over the last year into more educational, these school talks. We're definitely trying to diversify.
I think ultimately, if people really feel that they want to keep an exotic animal, they need to do a huge amount of research. They need to be absolutely sure that they can do it, that there is a good reason for them doing it.
I've seen quite a few snakes in the making of this documentary. Tell me what you like about Lucifer.
Well, I mean, what I like about him now, as a, generally, I adore the species, the Burmese python. I have a soft spot for him because he was a lot smaller when I got him first, and. Because of that, I've had him for maybe 4 years or so now, and I've watched him growing up. It's just I can kind of, I mean, they're all kind of, to me, they're all individuals, you know. They all have their different tendencies, like any other animal.
Well, you can't hold me, I'm too slippery. Well, I got poison, I just might bite you.
Man's New Best Friend was produced by Simon Tierney and was supported by a grant from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme.